rather than me showing up saying, here's our 10 values or here's what, you know, our mission statement or whatever. We go through these books and we get little phrases that come from, like, for instance, Parker J. Palmer, he says, before I can tell my life what I want to do with it, I need to first listen to what my life's telling me, what it wants to do with me. We're inviting that question into our lives. Before I'm so certain about this path I'm supposed to do, are we disciplined about listening to what life may be wanting to do with us?
Hello, everyone. Just kidding. This is Chris Powers, and I want to thank you for joining me on the Fort Podcast. This show is an open-ended discussion and journey telling the stories of leaders, founders, CEOs, and people making an impact through business, investing, and entrepreneurship. We take an unconventional approach that leans into thoughts and ideas that aren't often publicly discussed. We'd love to hear from you at thefortpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you again.
Chris Powers is the founder and CEO of Fort Capital. All opinions expressed by Chris and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Fort Capital. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon for real estate or investment decisions.
Today's episode is exciting for me because about a year ago, I got to be on my guest today, Ashton Gustafson's podcast, and it really was the final inspiration I needed to start this podcast. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce my friend Ashton onto the show.
What's happening?
What's up, man? There's a lot that goes on in Ashton's world. He is living in Waco, Texas now. He's from Wichita Falls, where my wife is from. We've gotten to know each other quite a bit over the last 7 years. Currently is involved in and is an owner in 3 or 4 different businesses, which we'll jump into. He's a public speaker. He writes poetry and much more. So without going too much into it, let's just dive straight in, baby.
Let's go.
All right. Why don't you talk a little bit about your journey, just like a summary of who you are?
Yeah. Well, I think you mentioned some of that. I've got involvement in a couple of real estate companies. Graduated from Baylor many moons ago, and my grandparents said, what are you going to do now? Didn't have that answer. And started kind of running some errands for them in the real estate business before I decided to get my license. Got my license 2005-ish, I guess, and kind of haven't looked back since. It was learned a few hard lessons in those first couple of years, but was able to grow a business, grow a team, was able to become a partner with Ann and Denny in Wichita Falls. Started seeing that I was spending some time in Waco, going to Baylor football games and things like that. And I thought, man, I'm down here so much, I ought to maybe start another real estate company. So had some relatives that wanted to be in the business that made that easy to do.
Yep.
They joined me. That was probably 7 or 8 years ago. And then hit a crossroads probably about a year or two ago and said, where do I want to pour concrete, you know, around my feet? What am I going to do? And really felt geographically for where I wanted to go in life that Waco was a great opportunity. 30 million people within a 3-hour radius.
Yep.
You know, 3 hours to Houston, 3 hours to San Antonio, Austin, Dallas, Fort Worth are all nearby. Still have that same kind of small Texas feel. So began a capital company.
Yep.
Kind of took your playbook and it is totally in its infancy.
Yeah.
It's about a year old with my dad and a partner, Lance Kennedy. And then we've branched off of that into managing deals and things like that. And then in 2009, I had a total life blow up.
Yeah.
And I was burning the candle at both ends and had to learn that lesson the hard way.
Yeah.
And that really was a soul shift for me.
Yeah.
And
what happened?
And I would, let me just say that the aftermath was an entire revolution of how I was handling life, relationships, and business.
Yeah.
To keep it super simple, adrenal fatigue, like just body shutdown. I know no other way to explain that if you're going to make a decade of life about doing deals and 2 Red Bulls a day, it's not going to end well.
Yeah.
And that was the trajectory I was on. And it was, you know, I look back at it as a gift because I was only going to learn that lesson one way.
Yeah.
It had to crash and burn. So I've kind of reemerged as a friend, as a husband, as a business owner, and really the pursuit of meaning, the pursuit of trying to make something good, true, and beautiful with my life, relationships, and business has become way more interesting than just the is the graph moving up and to the right.
Right.
You know, and while that's important, that's not the whole conversation. So that's the easiest invitation I can have into whatever I'm up to.
Well, welcome to the show, man. Well, to hit on 2009 for just a second, and I think there's a lot of people that run companies and are in businesses that are moving super, super fast, and burnout is almost imminent at some point. Yeah. Was it like an exact moment in time, a point of clarity? Were you reading books, or how were you searching for kind of something better?
So it was an 18-month journey.
Wow.
The first one was August of 20. And, you know, I said 2009. It was actually 2012.
Okay.
August of 2012, I literally couldn't move.
Yeah.
I could not get out of bed. And there was, I think there's a lot of things that maybe were playing into that. But I felt like I lived in doctor's offices for about 18 months.
Wow.
It was always like every 60 days, there was another something.
Yeah.
So I really think that, like, the body can manifest internal conflict.
Yeah.
And I did begin to kind of hear, and I don't mean to get wonky by any means, but like a still small voice that was like, hey, this isn't sustainable.
Right.
This isn't all true. This you're buying your own propaganda that's not true.
Yeah.
And so for me, it was really August of 2012 to about October of 2019.
Yep.
And that was when I was finally available to hear whatever memo was trying to get through. And then I remember I told Brent, I said, you need to pick the girls up. Y'all need to go to Waco. There's a stack of books that I haven't looked at in about 10 years. I'm going to look at those. I've got a blank journal and I'm just going to be in this house for about 10 days.
Yeah.
And literally I can remember it. And this is what I've spoken on across the country about 3 days into that 5-day period, the sentence that laid over me was, Ashton, you've got to make your life more and more about less and less.
Yeah.
That you think that you can do it all, have it all, be it all. But this isn't working. This isn't sustainable for you. And so I have been on this journey to understand what does that sentence mean for me.
Yeah.
It means getting comfortable with the word no. It means not being able to be everything. It means letting go of my dreaded and cherished illusions.
Yeah.
and learning, like, the surrender and letting go is, while it's the last thing we often want to do, it typically is the first step into liberation.
For sure.
And so those are hard lessons for a doer, driver, builder, you know, all those things that I think sometimes we get labeled as.
Yep.
I'm on that journey and learning what more and more about less and less can mean. And so it's been a gift to me. I hope whoever's listening, it can be a gift to them. Like, really, if there's a sentence that shifted my trajectory in life, it's that sentence right there.
Yeah. I think, I mean, that is super powerful sentence. And in the world that we live in today, with social media, and, you know, just kind of the culture of America is like more, more, grow,
right,
do more. I find myself in the same situation often, periodically, is I'm a very hard driver. I'm always wanting to go.
Yep.
And I'd be lying if I was on this podcast saying that at 30, 65, 24/7, that's how I feel. I burn out, not for like a day. There's periods of a month or two where...
Yep.
I kind of walk, I mean, my whole world is I'm trying to just kind of rest.
Yeah.
And I think it's a lot of it. I got off social media 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Was a huge part of that, was not all these constant signals of, you know, watching my friend go on vacation. I need to go on vacation.
That's right.
You know, he bought this, I bought this. It's helped calm me down. I'll never forget that, more and more about less and less.
Yeah. I mean, it's forever clarifying,
mm-hmm.
you know, and what happens with that sentence is life then becomes deeper. It doesn't necessarily become wider.
Right.
It becomes richer. You can actually taste your food again.
Right.
Like you actually remember to taste what you're eating again. You engage with your wife differently. You hold your kids differently. I Henry Nouwen wrote this book called Life of the Beloved, and he basically says there's three things that typically are the hinges of our suffering in life. And they're these three beliefs: I am what I have, I am what I do, I am what others think or say about me. Mm. And like, so convicting that, man, all too often the narrative in my head can get off in that space.
Yeah.
I am what I have, I am what I do, I am what others think or say about me. And so how do you become aware to right. that narrative? How do you have practices set in place to where you can step back and yep. go, I'm not going to buy that today.
Yeah.
You know, and from there you're really grounded in your being. And from there you can be a gift, you know, to yourself and to the world you've been entrusted. And that's what we all really want. Like we yeah. were told, go get successful, go become successful. And really at the end of the day, I think we all want this sense of connection.
Yeah.
Wonder, awe, love, maybe.
Yep.
And I hate using these fluttery words, but like they are what we're after.
Yeah.
And business, listen, you can find it through that. I don't want to turn my back on business at yeah. all. But I just know
you do that, own four of
you
them.
Know, yeah, yeah, yeah. But like no one's gonna Google my name in 100 years, you know. Like, but someone told me like we're four generations from being forgotten. Like,
yeah,
I don't know my great great grandfather's name.
Right.
Like I don't know it.
Right.
And so I know that pretty soon someone's gonna say the same thing about me.
Yeah. You know? So. No, that is that's super interesting. You mentioned something along what we were just talking about, where you said that you've spoke about it publicly, and it's something I wanted to chat about. You have done a lot of public speaking. Yeah. Did coming out of this experience, is that what pushed you into public speaking?
You know, a little bit. I think more than anything, what it did was like clarify my intention
right.
behind speaking. Unfortunately, most of the time, I think the draw for someone even like yourself or,
yeah.
or me, when you get invited to speak, is they want three steps to a better whatever,
yeah.
the five things that, you know, and like I sat in enough rooms, even myself, and I was like, what are we doing here?
Right.
You know, like you could make up another five things.
Yeah.
So I literally, when I walk into a room and I'm sharing with real estate professionals, as fast as I can get to the thing underneath the thing.
Yep.
That's what I'm trying to do. Because I think that if you can get you as a human being correct,
yeah.
all of your human doings, that's just a byproduct. It's gonna happen. But so many of us are conflicted in the I am what I do, I am what I have, I am what others say about me, you know? And when you build a business that way,
yeah.
that's not gonna be
sustainable,
you know? But when you build your business from I've got limits, I've got potential, from there, let's do something beautiful. I think it's a much more interesting way to go about doing it.
Warren Buffett has said a bunch that probably the most valuable thing he did early on in his life was learn how to public speak.
Mm.
And he's been very vocal about it's something that everybody can spend almost free or relatively little money learning to do. And it is the highest ROI skill that somebody can learn. Did somebody teach you how to do it, or like how did you get into that?
No, I mean, I think as a musician, there was an element of like, I hate using the phrase work in the crowd, but mm-hmm. like there's a beautiful space in a dance that if you're really going to hold space and impact a group of people,
right,
you kind of have to take them on a journey a bit.
Yeah.
I also think that like a lot of people are like, I'm so afraid of speaking. What would I ever say? To me, that's a clear sign that you just aren't interested enough in life itself.
Yeah. Or
like,
what you're talking
about.
What
are you studying?
Right.
What are you learning? What's mysterious to you?
Right.
What are the things that you're just constantly drawn to? And if you're studying those things and learning about those things, then chances are you're going to have something to say about them.
Yep.
And so I can't remember who said it. I think it was Liz Gilbert. She said something like, interesting people are interested people. Like they're interested in things and
yeah.
they're going and they're studying and they're doing their homework. And I think a lot of us, just don't do our homework.
For sure.
You know? But you don't just get up there and randomly have a bit.
Yeah.
You know? And no. If you do, you're not listened to.
Yeah. So would you write it out? Would you practice it? Or
you know, I wrote out a couple things like in high school. I was like asked to give a couple like senior class church things or something. I think I wrote those out, but no, I just kind of let it rip.
Yeah.
I have a few bullet points, you know, of like, hey, this will lead me here and this will lead me there. But, you know, humans want to hear something authentic.
Yeah.
And our smell test,
they have a great radar for
the radar is at an all time high of authenticity.
Yep.
And so, drop the narrative. I am what I do. I am what I have. I am what others think or say about me. And then from there, speak from that place. And I think that if you're prepared and you're well-read, I mean, reading changes everything.
Yep.
Like reading, I probably read, I mean,
it calms you down. Like every time you read something good, you kind of calm down in life.
If I include my car time each day that a book's playing, plus the hour or two at night, nothing shifted me more, you know? And I think that it's a game changer.
How do you find inspiration in what to read?
You know, it's funny. When I look at my library, I've got a stack of like the greatest hits. Yeah. You know, I've got this like stack of books, and anytime something new goes in there, it's kind of a moment.
Yeah.
But then I look at all these other books that I've read, and typically they come from another book.
Right.
You know, so-and-so gets quoted, and, you know, like I remember the first time I heard Richard Rohr say, you'll either allow your pain in life to transform you or you'll transmit it.
Right.
Well, man, I started reading that guy, and that opened me into just a vault of other unbelievable people that I was like, how have I never read this book? How have I never heard of this? So it's the you know, it's easy to connect the dots looking backwards, as Job says. And I think that I'll be reading, I'll see someone quoted in a book, and then I get on Amazon and buy it used for $3 and shows up in a couple of days.
You like reading on paper or your Kindle?
Paper guy.
Yeah, I'm a paper guy too.
Got to underline it, hold it. It means something. There's something there, you know.
I underline all the time, and then I rarely ever go back and look at what I underline.
Right.
I'm the king of just underlining the hell out of pages and somehow not making it back.
But it helps. I think there's a discipline there that you're probably
some sentences get two underlines.
That's there you
double
go.
Double lines.
Yeah. So I write in the front of every book.
Yep.
I write kind of just, where am I at? What am I thinking? Why am I reading this? And then I write kind of at the end of it. And then it's fun. I'm reading Parker J. Palmer's Let Your Life Speak right now. First time I read it was 2015, and this is probably my fifth or sixth spin. And
really?
It's fun to see little notes that I don't even really understand, but that I write in there. And so it's fun to go back in the oldies that you love.
Yeah.
You know, you get something new.
How many books do you think you read a year?
Easily 30.
Yeah.
I used to have a goal of 50.
Yeah.
And like the problem with goals is you hit them.
Yeah.
You know, and then you're like, what's next?
Yeah.
And then you think it's got to move up and to the right. So for me, it's more of just what am I drawn to? What am I learning? You know, and then reteaching it. Like that's in my company right now in Waco, I'm reteaching the book I'm reading.
Yeah.
So every week we're going through Let Your Life Speak, and it's a beautiful practice. I think Covey like says you should teach what you're trying to learn. Like there's an element of
how do you do that within a real estate company?
Yeah. I mean, it sounds so bizarre, right?
Yeah.
Like we're going to go again, talk about these soft skills of generosity, kindness, compassion, trust, connection.
How dare you?
How dare you know
shit.
What? Give me 10 points to a better listing.
I want
to
talk about profit, EBITDA,
that's
revenue,
right. That's
and
right. That's right.
Expenses.
I honestly, for me, it just wasn't authentic to do that any longer. That to sit in a room and, you know, get everyone rah rah about more numbers. Like the funniest thing is our profitability has moved up and to the right.
Right.
Like without demanding it to do so.
Right.
And so we all read the chapter. We come in. I ask some questions. I kind of walk through some lines that I underlined. And then we just kind of become human for a bit.
That's pretty interesting. So I'm assuming, you know, that's probably something new for the people there. They probably weren't doing that at their old job. Yeah. Is it something that everybody does? It's voluntary.
Yeah, by no means are you required to even show up or participate.
Yeah.
But I've seen a beautiful thing happen with these dialogues. And we've gone through books that aren't as like soul exposing. Greg McCann's Essentialism.
Yeah.
I mean, Essentialism's a brilliant book. The Art of Possibility by Ben Zander, probably an easily top three book that I've ever read. I can't remember your exact question, but
my question was more bringing that into the workplace is something unique. Is like, how have you seen that impact the team, and what's the aftermath of having read or, you know, an hour meeting where you go through it? Like, what are you seeing different than?
I would say the biggest thing is the introduction to new language.
Yeah.
That rather than me showing up saying, here's our 10 values or here's what, you know, our mission statement or whatever, we go through these books and we get little phrases that come from, like, for instance, Parker J. Palmer, he says, before I can tell my life what I want to do with it, I need to first listen to what my life's telling me what it wants to do with me.
Right.
So like, we're inviting that question into our lives. Before I'm so certain about this path I'm supposed to do, are we disciplined about listening to what life may be wanting to do with us? Force, not flow. Like I'm very interested into, and I'm seeing this thread of my life that's like, so much of what has been good, true, and beautiful has come out of flow and not me forcing it.
Yep.
You know, which is terrible news for my ego. but it's liberating news for seeing a little bit how some of this works, you know. And again, it doesn't turn your back on hard work, diligence, discipline. That's not it. But I do think I've learned more than anything that life isn't either or, it's typically both and.
Right.
And that's a big aha for me, you know.
It's not either or, it's both and.
Yeah. So it's not like, are you going to grind? Are you a winner never, you know, a winner never loses and whatever those phrases are. Yeah. A winner never quits and a quitter never wins. Are you going to, you know, are you going to Gary Vaynerchuk this thing? And I love Gary.
Yeah.
I really do. but like, then you got to go to sleep on your pillow every night and hear some of that narrative.
Yep.
And I've just found that maybe it's, you know, it's our hands and feet in the world, but it's also our heart and soul in the world.
Yeah.
And I think we have to learn how to dance with both of those.
Man, that's a,
we're jumping off the mystery.
Yeah. Well, you know, I knew that you were going to bring the heat today. You always have. Let's jump a little bit into, like, the, you have a business in Wichita Falls, you have a business in Waco, which I want to talk a little bit about Waco, because I believe in the Waco story. I think anywhere that Chip and Joanna Gaines want to be is
probably
going to do all right. Having kind of emerged from that experience in 2012, it's clearly been used for a positive force in your life, which outlets seem to be businesses that you've started or are a part of. Yeah. How do you manage a calendar with, I'm counting four businesses, including Meadow Lake Management, AG Waco, Bishop Realtors, and Muse Capital.
Yep. Yep.
How the hell do you do that?
So, first off, amazing people.
Yeah.
I've really tried to learn the spaces in these entities where I must be there. I have to be there. Some of them I'm learning how I can be there less.
Yeah.
It's the more and more about less and less.
Right.
You know, I think, like, if I was going to take any job today, I think my first question would be, whoever I report to, can you tell me the three non-negotiables? Like, every day, if I was able to show you I did these three things, or I accomplished these, or I'm reporting back in these three areas. And the good news is I've found is that for most of those, the majority of that can be done prior to 11 o'clock.
Right.
There is the belly to belly meeting with people out in the marketplace and things like that. But truly, I think we're so easily distracted that we, you know, who, I think it was Ziegler that maybe said we major in minor things. Maybe it's Robbins. Most people major in minor things, something like that.
Yeah.
I think Tony Robbins said that. And that's so easy to do because you can kind of get to a place in life where you do think everything matters equally. But I think leading yourself, leading a leader as a company, you have to know the non-negotiables each day in that business. And there are things that come up. There are things that you must do. But more than anything, it's people,
right,
that are helping us accomplish what we're trying to do.
How do you find the right people?
Man.
Do you use the Enneagram?
I'm an Enneagram fan.
We'll talk about it.
I do. All of these entities haven't required major recruitment.
Right. Because most of them are agents.
That's right.
That have probably been real estate agents in a prior. Are most people new?
A lot. It's a mix.
Yeah.
It depends. And podcasting for me has been my recruitment tool.
Right.
It's like I can give you the company values. I can show you our office space. I can show you how agents have done well here. But like, can just listen to this for a while, and I think you'll see what I'm up to or what we're up to.
For sure.
So that's, for me, shining eyes are like what I'm after.
Right.
And if I'm not seeing the people that I've been entrusted have shining eyes, then the question is, who am I being that their eyes are not shining?
Right.
And I realize I run the risk of using that metaphor and losing half the audience.
Yeah.
But you and I both know there's a Chris that can be in the room.
Right.
And there's glisten in the eyes.
Yeah.
There's a Chris that can be in the room, and it's like,
yeah.
Not and, and I'm, if I get that right 5% of the time,
yeah,
great. Like, yeah. I'm trying to get to 10, 20, 50.
Yeah.
But it's that awareness of the unawareness that is the huge aha for me.
What is the real estate industry like right now in the residential brokerage world?
Super competitive.
Yeah.
There's two types of agents in the marketplace. I think there's agents that want to be aligned with a company that they align with.
Right.
They want to have the values. They want to. It's a culture conversation. The other ones are, where can I hang a license? Where can I have the best split? And, I think you can probably tell who we are after.
Right.
And while our door is open for anyone that wants to come along, we don't just leave it wide open.
For sure.
We don't want to grow just because we need to grow. That's not our model.
Yeah.
I have friends that own big brokerages, and they've looked me in the eye and said, oh, we're just a body shop.
Right.
25% are here and new, 50% are happy, and 25% are leaving.
Yep.
That's not what we're after.
For sure.
That works.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
But we've chosen to be a little more and more about less and less.
Do you think that the industry as a whole on the brokerage side, technology is kind of going after everything.
Yep.
I know you think about it quite a bit. There's a lot of kind of discussion and startups coming up around those ideas. How do you think about the industry 10 years from now?
Yeah. So the funny thing is, we kind of felt this 10 years ago.
Yeah.
We didn't have the verbiage or vernacular or the capacity to think in terms of like artificial intelligence and things like that.
Right.
But, Gates predicted the exit of the real estate agent in like 95.
Yeah.
It's like, there's no need for these guys. And to be quite honest with you, there is a population where that's true.
Right.
I mean, people that have business savvy, they've done this before. It's not their first rodeo. It's not a dip. The financing side of it isn't crazy. You can probably figure that out.
Yeah.
The majority of the population, though, this is something that they do 3-4 times in their life, maybe more. And I don't know what it is, but for whatever reason, just disaster strikes.
Right.
I don't know how your real estate transactions have been, but like the easiest deals, something bizarre happens.
Yeah.
And I would, maybe you can program computers and things to do that, but there's something about human involvement that...
Well, such a big financial decision.
Yeah. I mean, there's... So I'm kind of at the place of like, it's going to change, but it's also not going to change.
Yeah.
Like the way it happens, I assume, is going to change, but there's something about.
My theory on it is you can't, the agents that just get a license and do a couple deals a year, don't do hardly any work and make these big fat commissions, there's not going to be room for those people anymore. The people that actually do a good job, love it, are going to use technology and tools to make them super, super agents rather than
irrelevant agents. I agree. And in a great market, which we've had for the last 10 years, you can do that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I like market shifts
because
I think we then have more value
for sure
for people. And so, it's all going to change.
Yeah.
You know, it's holding that, it's letting go of the certitude that it's not going to change, you know, kind of allows you just to flow into what's next.
Cool.
But our phones keep ringing, so we keep answering.
People are buying. Waco, Texas, and Wichita Falls. So you also own Muse Capital, which buys properties, commercial properties.
We do.
Why'd you get into that?
Well, I met a guy named...
Who the hell would want to buy real estate?
I met a guy named Chris Powers at the Masters one year. I think for me, I would love to see kind of move from being neck deep in the brokerage side of things into at least waist deep into private equity and wealth building. Like I said, we are in our infancy. We've probably had, I'd say, 5 transactions in the last 12 months.
Awesome.
Medical, storage.
How do you find them?
Because
you're a broker.
Yeah, because I'm a broker. One of them was near my house, our biggest transaction. I think I had you look at
the retail building.
So we picked that up. I mean, it's one of those deals where it's like you kind of like, who knows where all that's even going,
right?
You know, but I'm super keen right now on just great locations.
Yep.
I mean, if where we're buying, if those locations go bad, it's going bad for a lot of us. And so I've kind of lean on that of like, well, if that one goes bad, then it's, we're all in trouble. Not highly leveraged. You know, I mean, we're super, I've seen how that can go bad. I like sleeping at night. And we're providing good returns to our investors. We're not promising the moon. You know, I mean, we tell most of our guys, hey, we don't want to get in and out on these. We're long on all of this. And a lot of our investors are 50, 60, 70s. They want long-term cash flow. Out of every deal we've done, the first one we acquired probably 3 or 4 years ago, we just exited out of, but that was more of...
Was that the industrial building in Wichita Falls?
Still have that.
No,
that's a beast. We still have that.
Okay.
But the other one was just a retail center in Wichita Falls.
Cool.
Felt like it was time to move on. So, you know, it's not sexy by any means, but I think it's long term. You know, but my favorite Buffett quote from this last year was, you know, I don't lose sleep on the deals I didn't do. And so we haven't done a lot. But I just haven't agreed with some of the evaluations I've seen out there.
Is that all in Waco or Waco and Wichita Falls?
Waco and Wichita Falls.
Yeah.
Started to look some in Austin a bit. But, you know, we're not going to...
Do you manage all your
stuff?
We're not
going to force it. We do.
Yeah.
I don't personally. My partner Lance does.
Okay.
So thank God for Lance.
Yeah. Property management's no joke.
Yeah. He's amazing. We just brought on someone to kind of help him with what we're doing. So,
cool.
You know, it's...
Is Lance in Waco or Wichita?
He's in Wichita Falls.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's going on in Wichita Falls? Like, is it, my wife's from there and has family there, but is it growing? Is it not growing? Is it flat?
It hasn't grown in many, many, many years. Yeah. The Falls is kind of trying to find its way. I think its biggest challenge, to be honest, is that it's too close and too far from the Metroplex.
Right.
You know, that South Lake, Roanoke, Decatur, even Bowie, you know, just because of where they are probably going to see that growth before Wichita Falls does.
Yeah.
Heavy, heavy Air Force that's there. Who knows which direction the base is going. You know, which, what Wichita Falls does have going for it is beautiful souls that live there, great people, great work ethic.
Yeah.
But we're all searching for that shot in the arm, you know, that it needs. And who's not, you know?
If Fort Worth keeps growing north, I mean,
very well could.
It might take a while, but I was coming home from Oklahoma City the other day and drove right past the exit to Wichita Falls.
Yep. We may be 80, but eventually it'll get there.
It'll get there. All right, real quick on the Enneagram.
Yes.
So on prior episodes, I've talked a lot about my belief in, you can call them personality tests, trait finders, something that tells you more about who somebody is. We're huge believers in it here. And I was on your website and I saw that you host an Enneagram retreat.
Yeah.
My sister, it's like changed her life. She's gotten real deep into the Enneagram.
Yeah.
What is that all about for you? After hearing you speak for the first 30 minutes, it's really not surprising that
I get into it.
But what do you do at an Enneagram retreat, and how'd you get into Enneagram to begin with?
So that was a total stream off of the 2012 deal. Richard Rohr wrote a book many years ago about the Enneagram. A lot of people kind of think it's out of date in ways.
Yeah.
So I just started studying it. I mean, I didn't really have anyone sit down and go, here's this thing. I started to study it. You can go online and do this Enneagram evaluation. I think it's at the EnneagramInstitute.com.org, something like that. Once I started getting really in, the problem with the Enneagram is it announces the bad news.
Yeah.
It isn't, oh, you're a lion, beaver, otter, like it doesn't give you the warm, like if the Enneagram is really going to do its job, it announces the shadow side.
For sure.
And if we're going to cast a great light, we're going to cast a great shadow. If you're shining your light here, only I behind you can see that shadow.
Right.
We don't want to go there.
Right.
Right. It's easy just to keep that not conscious. But once we do go there and we can understand some of our motives and some of those cherished and, you know, dreaded illusions.
Yeah.
I've found a lot of freedom through this tool.
Yeah.
If you Google the Enneagram, Enneagram, it stands for nine, a nine geometrical shape. You're going to think that is the weirdest looking thing I've ever seen. What is he talking about? But if you study it, you know, like Susan Stabile from Dallas, I think, is one of the greatest minds in this space right now. And her statement to me when I interviewed her on my podcast was, don't take the test. Study the Enneagram.
Right.
Study it until it hurts. And when it hurts, you've found the number that you identify with. And she even went further to go, I'm afraid the worst thing that could happen to this Enneagram tool is that it becomes cocktail talk.
Right.
She's like, This is a tender, gentle, subtle conversation for you. And it's like, how did we concoct these personalities that we have? Was there a childhood wound that made this happen? And so you built this persona. You know, it really unlocks a lot of those things.
Right.
That, like, if you're not well versed in the internal work, you kind of may approach it like, I don't know about this. But then it announces where you go in health and integration. And then it announces where you go in stress. And then it announces as whatever number you identify with, where are you as far as like health goes? A healthy six operates like this, an unhealthy six. And so it really kind of gives you a baseline to understand some of these things that go on in your head sometimes.
What are you?
And so I'm a three.
Okay.
With a flaming four wing.
Flaming four wing.
So you can typically whatever number you identify, and those of us in the Enneagram circle, we never want to name someone as a number.
Right.
So we'll say, Chris, you identify as a three. We won't call you a three. So identify as three, and then you always lean into one of the numbers that are on either side of you. Gotcha. So the three could lean into the two, which is the helper, or it can lean into the four, which is the individualist. And that's where I go.
Yeah.
And then,
and what's the three?
The three is, like they'll call it the performer.
Yeah.
Sometimes I won't say most, but a lot of entrepreneurs are threes. Just very driven.
Yeah.
Like when you see something, you see how to make it successful.
Right.
Like you just, turn that, do that. Turn the oven to 350. It's that's going to be successful.
Yeah.
The shadow of that is we run from failure at all cost.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because if I'm not successful, then that means I'm a failure. And if I'm a failure, shit,
that's not good.
I'm smoked, you know? And so it's a tool that I think if you'll study it, and there's a lot of books. I mean, Susan Stabile wrote The Road Back to You.
My sister just gifted me that book.
Yeah. So I think that's a great ankle deep entry into it. My buddy Chris Hewerts wrote The Sacred Enneagram. It's a lot more difficult to read, but it really, really, really enters into like the two, threes, and fours, they operate from the heart.
Right.
The five, six, seven, they operate in the head.
I'm an eight.
You're an eight. Okay, interesting. The 8, 9, 1, those are body gut guys.
Yeah.
You know, so you probably say things like my gut tells me.
Yeah.
I feel it.
I can make 100 decisions in a day.
That's right. Yeah. Now I'll tell you, an eight in health is one of the coolest souls I've ever met because they go to two. And the eight, you know, the eight is, the eight gets a bad rap sometimes because he's up for a fight. He's up for a challenge. And an unhealthy eight can use that to push people in negative ways. But a healthy two, when they move, or a healthy eight, when they move into that two space, watch out. They say Mother Teresa was an eight,
really?
Which is crazy. You don't think that. And yet her entire life was this, you know, here's this little woman. And they say she was just full of it, man.
I took it once. I need to figure out my, I have it written down somewhere. I'm an eight something W.
It's probably seven wing or nine wing. Yeah. Cause you'll have one of those.
It's a seven.
Yeah. Yeah. And sevens are, I mean, you always want sevens to be around.
I think it's a seven.
They're always up for a good time.
Yeah.
It's very social, very well read, you know.
Interesting.
Always have friends. Yeah. Always want more friends. Sevens are great. Sevens are a blast.
I need to check that out again. And you do a retreat. What do you do at the retreat?
Yeah, we
It's coming.
It's not weird. It sounds like an Enneagram retreat. So we're I'm starting to speak on it.
Yeah,
you know, like I'm going to go speak in Colorado Springs for a company up there and do an Enneagram.
So you're like a.
I am not licensed.
You have a doctorate in Enneagram.
Yeah, the problem is I am not licensed. I'm a redneck from Waco, Texas.
Yeah,
that's studied a lot.
Yeah.
But Chris came in. Like we had Chris Hewerts come in, and he was kind of our guest speaker. Chris Hewerts, one of the top Enneagram guys in the country. And so
how big is the society and people? Like in the hundreds, thousands.
I would probably say it's become a lot more popular in the last 2 years.
Yeah. Why is that?
I think we're all waking up that we need more self. Like his phrase is this, the degree to which we can become self-aware is the degree to which we can self-critique.
Yeah.
You know that's true.
Hell yeah. Like that's a good quote.
Like,
how do you remember all these?
I don't know, man. I just...
The degree to which we become self-aware is the degree to which we can self-critique.
You know, and I think it's that awareness of the unawareness.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you could leave this office every day going, I became aware of one more thing I was unaware about, and you did that for the next 30 years, you got $1 billion company on your hands.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, a soul that's full.
Yeah, for
like,
sure.
I think there's the both and, right? There's leaving that either or. I'm going to have a successful business, die miserable. What if you What if we can have both, you know? And what if the things that are being called, that we're being called to, are more than we could ever imagine to have both of those?
Yeah.
There's a lot of surrender and letting go. There's a lot of internal work, you know, but I feel like our generation is getting this,
yeah,
which makes me super excited for my kids.
Yeah.
I think everyone kind of has this hell in a handbasket idea, and I'm going, man, we're waking up.
Every number in the world's a positive signal.
We're waking up. We're becoming more connected. I'm excited to see where it goes.
I think social media has pushed us that way because it's become so inauthentic. It has become so, in a lot of ways, just total trash.
I agree.
That, again, people's radar for authenticity, despite, you know, this young generation being born into a world where that's normal, yep, they still know it's not normal.
Yeah, I was listening to CNBC on the way up here, and they were talking about Facebook and,
yeah,
everyone that's listening to you. They're like, you probably want to take Alexa out of your house.
Facebook's trash. I know more people, I wouldn't say, maybe trash isn't the right word, I know more people that are much unhappier in life because of social media, mm-hmm, than people that are happier in life because of social media.
That's true.
I actually might not know anybody that is happier because they've been on social media, but I know a lot of people that have.
It's the modern day smoke break.
Well, it happened to me. I would look at a day and go, why did I not have a good day? And you'd pick up your phone, and I think people do this, it's self-sabotage. You'd look at your Facebook or your Instagram, and you had no clue that you were about to get your mind and day hijacked by some stupid article or your friend that's on a rant about something that doesn't matter.
Yep.
And I was like, man, I'm just sitting here having a great day. I picked my phone out of my pocket at one because I became so addicted to picking my phone out of my pocket, yep, and checking social. I didn't even know I was doing it.
Yep.
Because when I got off the app for the first month, I would like pull my phone out and go search for Facebook before I realized, yep, subconsciously, but it would hijack my mind. And then I'd be like pissed for a couple hours. It's, mm-hmm, total self-sabotage. I did not have to pick that phone out of my pocket.
Yeah. Everyone's highlight reel.
Yeah.
You know, or their rant.
Oh, I know. It's made it harder to be a businessman, a husband, a father. Like, you're just seeing everybody's high. You're just never living up to what's in the picture.
Yeah.
But either of the people in the picture, really.
Very true.
I've seen a lot of people that take pictures that are just not how they're really feeling.
Those filters.
There's filters. But I think the pendulum is shifting back. And I agree with you. I think there's a lot of people that are interested in learning more about what's their DNA is all about, not what they think it's all about.
Yeah. I'm very curious as to how we handle that space with our kids.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, 50 years ago, we smoked on airplanes.
Yeah.
It's what you did.
Yeah. We smoked everywhere.
I'm hopeful.
You smoked if you're pregnant.
Yeah, that's true. But doctor's orders.
Right.
I'm hopeful that this generation coming after us can somehow look back at now and go, y'all did what?
Yep.
You told everyone where you were all the time? You know, like, huh? I don't know. I hope that happens. Of course, it's on us to teach our kids that.
Yeah. We'll see. The world is, it's interesting. Facebook's trying to become a private company now rather than private, mm-hmm, data company rather, mm-hmm, than public. But
yep.
I noticed on your website, you had talked about online training courses. Mm-hmm. Is that happening?
Hadn't happened yet.
Do you want to?
Just haven't had the capacity for it. I have been doing coaching.
Okay.
So about every quarter, I'll have about 3 to 4 people.
Okay.
Where we're on a call for an hour a week.
Coaching agents.
The funny thing is like, we don't talk about real estate much.
Yeah. At this point in the conversation, I can gather.
It's great. I've got clients, Wisconsin, Indiana, Colorado.
How do you find
Florida.
Them? How do they find you?
A lot of them through my podcast.
Okay.
Or I've spoken like in their area.
Yeah.
How
often do you speak a year?
I used to do it a lot more.
Right.
I used to 20 plus dates a year.
Wow.
I've got 2 gigs this fall.
Yeah.
I've pulled back. It just didn't make as much sense to go anymore.
Right.
But I'll still go. I'm I, the conversation has shifted. I'd almost rather go somewhere and not get paid, but get to speak about something that I am amped about versus sometimes what they want you to speak on.
For sure.
So that's been a blast. I mean, that's been really, really life-giving to just kind of walk a journey with people, become friends from afar.
Yeah.
And really see their internal journey, you know, shift. I mean, I think whatever we're seeing out there is a reflection of something that's going on in here.
For sure.
And so, again, it's the awareness of the unawareness.
Everybody can see something different, even though it looks the same.
Yeah. Yeah. I think what's the phrase? When you change the way you look at things change. I mean, I think, bingo, of course that's true.
Do 3-4Ws have incredible memories?
Maybe. I don't know. There's something about, I've always remembered lyrics really well.
I've never, I never remember lines in movies.
I don't watch many movies, but a song, I can get the song fast. And I think, there's just some sentences that when I hear them, and they kind of rattle my chest, I go, I need to etch that one in there.
You write poetry.
Which is weird. But a four, super it's weird. Such a four. It's such a four wing.
How'd you get into that? Why do you do it? And how often do you do that?
So it happened in an autumn season when I was in total disarray.
Is there a difference between autumn and fall?
It just sounds better.
Yeah, that's more of a poetic way to say it.
It's a better way to say it.
Okay.
So I'm reading, I'm like 2012, 2013, it was the fall, and I realized that I had to let some leaves go. That like, I was holding on to some leaves that were no longer serving me.
Yep.
And that when they disappear, you're kind of naked, you're kind of vulnerable, you're gonna be seen, but only then can something new, fresh, surprising, satisfying come along. So I did this random project where I was like, I'm just going to write something that I'm feeling through the universe for about 60 days. And that's what's online.
Yeah.
And I really haven't even done it since.
It's from 2015.
I haven't really done it since, but, metaphor is kind of all we have.
Yeah.
You know, they say tell the truth, but tell it slant. Like the metaphor, while they're not perfect, they can perfectly describe something.
Right.
And so for me, it's been freeing to have poetry as a space to read. And like, if you've ever read Rumi or Parker J. Palmer or Mary Oliver that just passed away, I mean, just Google Mary Oliver and read some of her stuff and you'll be like, oh, okay.
Mary Oliver.
Yeah. I mean, her most quoted line in one of her poems is this: tell me what it is that you plan to do with your one and precious life. Like, that's poetry. But we don't get that in business and sport. You know, you're not going to get that there. But there's the both and.
Why do you think you don't get that in business and sport?
Well, there's winners and losers in sports.
Yeah.
At business, there can be win-win. Beautiful business. There should be win-win.
Yeah.
And maybe I don't fully align with the business side of that statement.
Yeah.
I think let me rephrase it. When I approach my interior life the way I do a profit and loss statement, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
There's way more meaning and metaphor and mystery in here. And mystery isn't the ability to not know things. Mystery is infinite knowability.
Right.
Like, so, like, yeah, your listenership is just nosediving in this interview. Forgive me. But like, that's what we're all after, right? I mean, if you reflect backwards and you think of, I just think of your life that, like with your dad.
Right.
With Palmer.
Yeah.
I mean, that window of Palmer.
Right.
Like you have gone through some stuff.
Yeah.
And if you point backwards
right.
and you go, and I say, Chris, tell me what it's about. and those two events are rattling around, you don't have a black and white answer.
Yeah.
You have much more mysterious answer.
Yeah.
And that's why I love you in your life, because I know you've been through it.
Yeah.
Like you can
been through the shit.
You know, I know a whole person. HWHOLE. Yeah. I know a whole person when I've seen it, and that's you. You've gone through it.
I appreciate that. Yeah. No, I mean, we talk about it in here all the time, even in business or in anything, but most of the people that do something great on the planet are doing something great. Usually the trail behind them is something dark or failure, or they're coming out of something.
Great love and great suffering.
Yeah.
Those are the two. You show me a transformed person.
Yeah.
And you will, and somewhere back in that story is great love or great suffering every time. And we would never willingly take it on.
Right.
Like it's just a bit of the human experience.
Yeah, you have to go through
that. That's you can't go around it, can't go over it. You have to go through it. And, you know, the faith tradition that I come from, if I have permission to go there,
yeah.
I mean, that's kind of what we hang our hat on.
Yeah.
You know, is that there's this thing called resurrection and you got to go through it.
Yeah.
And it's not a one and done, you know, it's not a once in a lifetime deal. It's actually every day I get to die to something and come out on the other side of it.
It happened. I was at dinner last night. We were just talking about this concept of happiness as like this destination you're trying to like get to, like it's going to last forever. And it's just more of a very long journey of ups and downs and peaks and valleys. And,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Happiness is a buzz.
Yeah.
Joy, that was what he said. Joy is something altogether different.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
you can be joyful even in something really shitty.
Yeah. And the other thing is it's really hard to have that conversation with someone if they haven't been through it.
Yep.
Because we're sold the total opposite.
For sure.
I am what I have. I am what I do. I am what others say about me. Like those are all statements of some type of happiness, you know, but joy on the other hand, joy is like I made it.
Yep.
Joy is showing the wounds and on the other side of it saying shalom.
Yeah.
Peace. I made it.
On that note, thank you very much
for
traveling
to
Fort Worth and being on the mic with me today. Seriously, one of the most interesting conversations.
Well, thank you. I mean, please hear from me the mutual respect of you, your life, what you're doing here is amazing.
I appreciate it.
But you're doing the both and.
Thank you, man.
Really well.
Thank you.
And when I grow up one day, I hope I'm like Chris Powers.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Yep. Hey everyone, it's Chris here again. Thank you so much for joining me on this journey. If you enjoy the show, please subscribe to us on iTunes and leave a 5-star rating or write a quick review. You can also email us at thefortpodcast@gmail.com with your thoughts and comments. Thanks again, and I'll see you on the next episode.